Can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, football fans, it's Andrew Filippone, host of the First and Pod podcast. Join me and my co-host, three-time All-Pro Patrick Peterson, as we break down every game every week. New episodes drop on Monday and Friday mornings. Be sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
Ooh, that's why I'm easy.
It's a football feeding frenzy. After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
I'm easy like Sunday morning.
The NFL season kicks off. Let that sink in for a second. Put that in your pipe and smoke it. If you do that sort of thing, it's really not healthy for you. What is healthy for you is screaming at the television, whether it's because it's your favorite team or your favorite team to hate. Even if it's a blowout, you're going to hear highlights, whether you like it or not.
It is caught for a touchdown.
Yes!
Can you believe it? Unbelievable!
Believe it!
A moment of silence for the NFL, please.
Play football, you play football. I don't know how you get better playing football without playing football.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Jumping the gun a little bit with the football hype, but exactly 4 weeks from tonight, we'll be all hype about the opener of the NFL season. Opening night, if you will, comes on a Thursday, September 5th. Although for a lot of you, that means vacations are done, kids are back in school, post-Labor Day. I know it does feel like the fun has just begun for those of us who love football, but it can also be slightly discouraging because the summer went so quickly, and it felt a little bit like a tinge of fall in my neighborhood on Thursday. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. I'm jazzed up between the Olympics and now getting back into the football preseason full bore. Plus, it's almost Friday. We're ushering in what is a free-for-all, fantastic, goofy, fun Friday. Online at A-Law Radio and then also on our Facebook page. And as I can, I'm going to put up a post, but I'd love to hear from you even before I do. Which of the NFL teams that did not make the playoffs last year do you think will be in come 2024? Just fun to be able to guess, because that's what we're doing. But based on offseason moves, we still don't know what's happening with Brandon Ayuk. And did you see the exchange with CeeDee Lamb and the Dallas Cowboys ownership on Thursday? All of that we're going to cover as we welcome Ryan Dunleavy, fresh off Lions and Giants preseason in the rain at MetLife Stadium. He covers not just the New York football teams, but the entire NFL for the New York Post. And we're glad to have you with us, Ryan. One of the big question marks as we head into not just preseason, but regular season, the new kickoff formations. What's your initial impression?
So far, it looks like through this Giants game I was at and the Hall of Fame, watching the Hall of Fame game, the field position doesn't really look like it's going to change much. Teams used to get the ball at the 25 on touchbacks. They're getting it out to about the 30-yard line on kickoffs. If a team has a really dynamic returner, you're just going to kick it through the back of the end zone again anyway, and in that case, the touchback is now the 30, not the 25. So I don't think it's going to change a whole lot. What it does is the fan can't get up and go to the bathroom or get his popcorn during the kickoff anymore. There's another action-packed collision play in football, which is what the NFL wanted, and it's a safer version. It's meant to be like a typical running play from scrimmage, but it's a play you have to watch. I just don't think it's going to be the wild 60- or 70-yard returns people were expecting. But coordinators, once it gets the regular season, they'll have some tricks up their sleeve, and I think you'll see a bouncing ball a lot that somebody has to recover.
What have you heard from players about the new format?
I talked to some players after tonight's game. Miles Boykin, a longtime special teamer in this league now on the Giants, he's like, it's a really quick play, and you have to get on your lanes really quick, because as the first guy to get blocked, that's where the crease opens, and that's where you could have a 65 or 70 yard return. But I, like I said, I think what the most interesting thing for me, at least early on, is going to be it's a live ball in the end zone. So like where it used to just hit the end zone and be down for a touchback, now the recovering receiving team has to fall on the ball in the end zone. If they don't, the kickoff team could recover it for a touchdown. If you want to bounce it down the field, as long as it lands in the end zone, then you could have crazy bounces, and then maybe it deflects off somebody, almost like the onside kick. So I think there'll be some tricks in terms of just corralling the ball. I don't know that every team will just straight kick a pop-up to the five-yard line and return it. I think that part will be interesting. And it's one of those things, it's a copycat league. So as soon as somebody figures something out that works, you'll see everybody else doing it.
The Giants, they have their cult hero, Tommy DeVito, who ends up playing a bunch in this game. But where is the reason to hope that this team is making a step forward from 2023?
A couple reasons. One, the Giants in their heyday, and everybody knows this, whether it's Lawrence Taylor or Michael Strahan, Justin Tacos, Umanura, their thing, their franchise identity is the pass rush. And they have a very good one. I mean, Dexter Lawrence is as good a pass rushing nose tackle as there is in the game. I think he has 81 pressures over the last 2 years, which the next closest nose tackle has like 16. So he's as good as there is in the game from that spot. And then the edge duo of Kayvon Thibodeau, who had 11 and a half sacks last year in his second NFL season, and the big money acquisition of Brian Burns, that's a pretty good trio of pass rushers. If the Giants can keep games close, that trio should do a lot of damage, as long as teams aren't running out the clock with a big lead. That is where it goes to the Giants' offense to be much better and score points. I mean, they had one of the most hideous offenses in the league two of the last 3 years. Malik Nabers has been an incredible show during training camp. I mean, I wasn't there for Odell Beckham's early years. People say this is what they're comparing it to. I do a lot of Jets here in New York, too. Garrett Wilson's a phenomenal receiver who has only not even scratched the surface because of quarterback play. Malik Nabers is already doing things Garrett Wilson's doing 3 years into the league. The Giants are going to force feed the ball to Malik Nabers. His ability to create separation is incredible. He's getting 4 or 5 yards separation. That's what like the Justin Jeffersons and Jamar Chase do. He'll be an immediate impact player.
We're excited to have Ryan Dunleavy in the wake of the first two Thursday night preseason games of week one post Hall of Fame game. Covers the NFL for the New York Post, and it's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. So on the other side of the field, the Detroit Lions, a lot of excitement and hype about this team after last year. What maybe was keeping them from being elite?
They changed their secondary, right? They went out and got Carlton Davis and their first round pick, Terrion Arnold. That, I think, is an area that they've improved. Their offensive line is probably one of the best in the NFL. If possible, they didn't lose much when they went from Jonah Jackson to Kevin Zeitler. They have the same other 4 starters. I think it's just a team, honestly, Amy, that needed a year of experience. They were in the Super Bowl if Dan Campbell didn't make 2 head-scratching decisions to go for 4th downs, right? I think from the top down, from Campbell down to the players who had never really experienced those kind of big games before, I think they just needed a year of, okay, this is what it's like. I don't think they really had to do much to improve the roster. I think they just had to get a feel for it, get back there. And I just saw them do 2 joint practices. The starters didn't really play too much for the Lions tonight in the preseason, but they're as tough, as physical, and as swaggery, if that's a word, a football team as I've seen in a long time. I mean, forget that they're the Lions or that helmet. That if I told you that team was the Seahawks of 10 years ago, you'd be like, yep, that's who they look like.
A lot of chippiness and extracurricular activity in those joint practices, huh?
Oh, yeah. Both teams got fined $200,000 apiece because there were so many fights in those practices. And you know what? I think both owners would probably sign up for that. It was the kind. No one got injured in any of the fights. It was just 2 teams standing up for themselves. One who the Lions, who want to bully a lot of people. That's their style, biting kneecaps, Dan Campbell. And a team who's tired of being bullied, has been one of the worst teams in the NFL for the past decade, and they're going to preach physicality and toughness all this year as their identity. And So it was important to them not to get bullied around, even though they were at a severe talent disadvantage in those two practices.
So thinking about the two teams in New York, Jets and Giants, and the Jets are bringing back Aaron Rodgers slowly, trying to be really careful with him. Which team has a higher ceiling in 24, Ryan?
Oh, it's definitely the Jets. The Jets are loaded. Their roster is so incredibly good. I think I did the other day, they have like eight guys on the team who either were first or second team all pros within the last 2 years or have a legitimate case like Breece Hall to be a first or second team all pro this year. And how many teams have that kind of top end talent? Like the Chiefs don't have that kind of top end talent. They have Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce and Chris Jones, but they don't have eight guys like that. Maybe the Ravens come to mind as a team that might have that much, the 49ers as that much talent, but you're talking about the cream of the crop. And honestly, I think that's what the Jets are. Yeah, Aaron Rodgers has to stay healthy, but if he stays healthy, I don't have any doubts that he can play at a near MVP caliber level like he did before his injury. And then the defense is loaded. The offense has playmakers. The offensive line should be good again if they stay healthy. But it's a very complete team. The real question is Robert Saleh has never really coached in big games. Kind of like I just said for Dan Campbell, it was a learning experience in big games to figure out those when you go for it, when you kick, how you do timeouts. My eyes will be on Saleh if the Jets get off to like a 5-2, 6-1 start. How's he managing big games?
Well, you make the delineation between the Chiefs personnel and the Jets. It sounds like it comes down to leadership. How much confidence then do you have in the Jets leadership?
It's a very much to be decided situation, right? I mean, Nathaniel Hackett probably gets fired if any other quarterback is the Jets quarterback besides his longtime friend Aaron Rodgers, who, you know, wants him there, and they've had success together. Robert Saleh probably gets fired if he doesn't have the excuse of, well, Aaron Rodgers got hurt, we didn't even get to run this back. But how many coaches get a fourth year with his record? Joe Douglas has made some incredible draft picks and pulled off the Aaron Rodgers trade, but he also picked Zach Wilson number two and, you know, has had some serious flops in his record. I mean, you don't see many regimes last as long as this Jets regime has lasted with the kind of lack of production that they have, if that makes sense. So it's obviously a do or die year for the Jets. But like I said, all the pieces are in place if they stay healthy. I don't think age is going to be a problem. Most of their star players are young, except for maybe the two most important positions, quarterback and left tackle. And as much as we talk about Aaron Rodgers, they're going to need Tyron Smith, who played at an all-pro level last year, to play healthy and, you know, to be healthy for most of the season. He hasn't played a full season since like 2015, but they'll sign for 14 games of Tyron Smith.
Feels good to talk about some NFL as we get into week one of the preseason officially. Ryan Dunleavy of the New York Post is with us after hours with Amy Lawrence. Love to get your opinion about Brandon Ayuk, and so far still in limbo. What do you think is the best situation for him?
What a crazy situation this has become. There's a holdout going on here with Hassan Reddick of the Jets, who's like 16 days into his holdout. But it doesn't seem to have the same feel. Like Christian McCaffrey called him like a former teammate already. It just seems like everybody knows it's over and they just don't know where it's going, whether they can't agree on trade compensation or contract terms, or Ayuk can't decide where he wants to go, although I don't really know why he gets to pick that. Honestly, in this business of football, and I talked to enough players to know how this works, is like the best situation is probably whoever gives him the best contract. From a football standpoint, it's the 49ers, right? I mean, you can go have another great year and get paid in free agency, but nobody wants to take that chance. He could tear an ACL week one and his career's forever altered. So it could be the Browns or the Steelers, and you have two rivals battling each other up to see who can ante up the most. I mean, it's probably the Browns, but I don't think the Steelers are going away either.
Ryan, speaking of the business of football, the owner of the Cowboys, Jerry Jones, and his receiver that's holding out in CeeDee Lamb, and Jones expressed that there's not a great sense of urgency about signing CeeDee to a new contract, getting him into camp or preseason, and the response from his receiver online was LOL. What do you make of that exchange and the fact that Jerry, at least publicly, isn't worried about CeeDee Lamb being with the team?
It's been a while since Jerry Jones put his foot in his mouth. We were kind of overdue for that. Look, I'm all for owners talking as much as possible, but he might talk a little too often. Look, it's not a smart thing to say. I get what he's saying. Like, he's under contract. He's got to play for us. You know, we're not panicking. It's never a good sign for a team to show any sense of panic. So even if they are privately worried about it, you don't want to put on that face. And look, they're in a tough spot, right? They have three guys on their team who are going to want to be the highest paid player at their position, whether it's Dak Prescott, Micah Parsons, or CeeDee Lamb. Heck, they're probably going to want to be – Parsons and Lamb are probably going to want to be the highest paid non-quarterbacks in the NFL. Forget highest paid at their position. So they got to get three deals. And they've dragged their feet on this for too long. They should have gotten one of these deals done last year. Now they're going to get hit with them all at once. And really, it goes to show why the Cowboys, you know, their window was last year, 2 years ago. Like, yeah, they can still win a championship, but now the rest of the team is going to get worse because you're going to have these highly paid guys. It's why you want to win when your superstars are on smaller contracts. It's why the 49ers wanted to win when Ayuk was young with Brock Purdy on a rookie contract. It's not good to have your wide receiver laughing at your owner publicly, but money cures a lot of ills. So if Jerry ponies up, then it'll all be good.
Which of the rookie quarterbacks are you most excited to see roll out in week one or even in the first month if we don't see them all debut in the openers?
I think it's got to be Caleb Williams. It just feels like a cliche pick because it's the first overall pick. But when I was talking to scouts before the draft, I mean, they were putting him in that category that people put really elite quarterbacks in, Trevor Lawrence prospect, Andrew Luck prospect. It's like the best guys to come out since Peyton Manning. Plus, their team is loaded, right? I mean, you're talking about him stepping into a situation. He probably has the best team around him that any number one overall pick has had as a quarterback in like 10, 15 years, because they really weren't worthy of the number one pick. They won seven games. They traded for Keenan Allen. They have DJ Moore. They added DeAndre Swift in free agency. It's a really good offense. So he's probably the one. And then the guy I'm really excited to see, just because, you know, I know covering the Giants, how much they were fawning over him, is Drake May. He's in the total opposite situation where their team is terrible, and he's going to have to figure out ways to make bad players around him better whenever he gets on the field. It might not be week one, but he's going to play sooner rather than later. And I want to see if he is really as good as the Giants thought he was, or if he needs as much work as some other teams thought he did.
Well, flipping it around a little bit, which of the new coaches, whether it be a Dan Quinn or a Gerard Mayo or a Raheem Morris, which one is positioned to have the most success right away?
I can't rule out Jim Harbaugh because he's such a good coach. I mean, he's in Patrick Mahomes' division. I don't think the team is that good. He does have a great quarterback, which, you know, although Justin Herbert's already dealing with plantar fasciitis. If you ask me over the long term who's going to have success, I'd probably pick him because obviously we've seen him do it at a bunch of different places. Immediate success, I think you named him. I think it's Raheem Morris, just because I don't think the NFC South is that good. I think the Falcons roster is the best of those to begin with. So I think they're in the driver's seat to get that division, get a home playoff game. And Kirk Cousins. I mean, Kirk Cousins, people like to, you know, poke fun at Kirk Cousins because, you know, of his silly touchdown celebration in Washington, or because he's such a nice guy, or because he doesn't win, hasn't won a lot in the playoffs. But Kirk Cousins is a really good quarterback. There are 20 teams that would kill to have Kirk Cousins as their starting quarterback. So assuming he's okay coming off his season-ending injury and playing with Bijan, you talk about Caleb Williams being in a spot to succeed. He's playing with Bijan Robinson, with Kyle Pitts, with Drake London. There's a lot of talent around him too. So I would think Kirk Cousins and Raheem Morris are pretty well positioned to have a good first year together.
Is the AFC North still going to be the toughest division in football, top to bottom?
It has to be, right? I mean, I think the AFC East could be loaded with the Dolphins, the Jets, and the Bills, but the Patriots are bad. I don't know any other division where all four teams, they were above 500 last year. I think that was the first time ever they could all be above 500. The Bengals are probably like a second-tier Super Bowl contender. I don't know how to sort out that division. I think they're all really, really good. And maybe we see for the first time a situation where, yes, right, all four of them could technically make the playoffs. Maybe we'll see that for the first time ever.
Ryan, before I let you go, let's end with the two-time defending Super Bowl champions, the Chiefs Well, we know what they bring back. We know what they're capable of, but it's a brand new season. Who or what provide the biggest obstacles and stand in the way of the Chiefs getting a third consecutive Super Bowl win?
It's a good question. I'm actually working on a story about that kind of right now. And who, I guess it's probably the Ravens, the Jets, the Bills in the AFC, and the Bengals in the AFC, probably the 49ers and the Eagles in the NFC. What? It's like, you know, obviously any kind of injury, it's wear and tear. It's their offensive tackle situation. It's drama because, forget Taylor Swift. If you thought that was drama, that was a cute little story. They had so much, I mean, so whether it's Rashee Rice and his offseason arrest, whether it's Harrison Butker and his controversial comments, whether it's they had one of their offensive linemen, his last name is Morris, to get arrested. They've had so much drama around them. You think Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes will be able to insulate themselves for that, but and then there's the wear and tear, right? They play a lot more games than everybody every season, so eventually that catches up to you. So there's all those kind of factors, but push comes to shove, you're like, Ryan, pick a team to win the Super Bowl. I'm going to pick the Kansas City Chiefs.
And they are on the throne and firmly entrenched there. All right, look forward to reading that from Ryan Dunleavy. You can find him on Twix at RY Dunleavy, and he covers the NFL for the New York Post. And gosh, just talking to you has got me all excited about kickoff, which is now 4 weeks away. Ryan, thank you so much for a couple of minutes.
Thanks for having me on.
If you haven't yet heard what Jerry Jones had to say about signing CeeDee Lamb, what elicited the LOL from CD online on social? Well, you'll hear Jerry Jones coming up. And a little more to dot our preseason, just because we're off and running. We're inside of a month now until NFL opening night. And then also got an update on some of the baseball stories we've been following. Man, we're wrapping up a work week. You know, early in the week, it feels like it's dragging. My wagon is sagging and everything's dragging. But then you get to the end and, okay, little bit of juice because it's almost Friday. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
Back to throw. They blitz him from the safety spot, and Prescott escapes that, runs to his right, throws on the run to the middle of the field. Lamb at the 50. No one will get anywhere near him. Lamb could crawl in if he wanted to. C.D. Lamb, 92 yards from Dak Prescott for the Dallas touchdown.
Here's Amy Lawrence.
On the Dallas Cowboys Radio Network, CeeDee Lamb, number one asset to Dak Prescott and the Cowboys offense in 2023, but it's a new year, it's a new season, and it could be a completely different wide receiver one. Okay, maybe that's melodramatic. It might be, but right now, CeeDee Lamb with 1,749 yards in the last season in 2023. And then in addition to that, when you're talking about the touchdowns, the first downs, the weapon, whether or not he's getting the ball, just the presence of CD on the field, that alone is a threat. Not that you want that dude to be a decoy most of the time, but he had the 12 touchdowns and also makes life easier for everyone else on the field and makes life more challenging for defensive coordinators and defensive secondaries. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Glad to have you with us. CD is holding out. He does not yet have a new contract. And as he tries to leverage his time away from the Cowboys, of course, people are running to Jerry Jones, owner slash general manager. So in Oxnard, California, as the Cowboys prepare for the season, they're holding joint practices with the Rams in advance of their first preseason game. Lamb is staying healthy, staying away, and believing that this will force the Cowboys into action. Here's the thing, though. He's scheduled to make nearly $18 million this season. I know it's not the long-term security or the guaranteed money or the fat signing bonus that receivers are getting. He does want to be one of the highest paid in the NFL. But after making a lot less on his rookie contract, to leave $18 million on the table, that's hefty. He's on the reserve, did not report list as of earlier in the week so that they can use the roster spot. And anytime Jerry Jones is standing in front of a microphone, people are asking him about CeeDee Lamb.
Are you saying there's a sense of urgency as you begin the preseason to get CeeDee done?
No.
No? Why do you say that?
I'm just... I went to high school or I went to college. I don't know why I said it, but I'm just saying I don't know. I don't have a sense of urgency about getting it done.
It's a long-standing tradition.
Pick any reason you want. I was at Nobu 2 days ago. Give that as a reason.
Okay. I'm not sure that CeeDee Lamb would share their humor or have the same sense of mirth over the whole thing. But Jerry, whether this is about keeping his cards close to his vest or whether he really doesn't have any stress or anxiety about getting it done, his answer was no. The reporter asked him, do you have any sense of urgency about getting this contract completed for Lamb? And he laughs and he said, no. And I don't know why I said that. I mean, as they follow up, I don't know. I don't. And then he repeated it. I don't have a sense of urgency about getting it done. I was at Nobu 2 days ago. He uses that. Well, he doesn't really use it. He just says, if you want to use that as an excuse, you can. I was at Nobu 2 days ago. All right. I don't think that's an adequate excuse. And I'm not really sure he's, again, looking for any kind of excuse. And maybe he doesn't need to because he's Jerry Jones and he owns the Cowboys and he signs the checks. But it's kind of a weird thing to say with laughter publicly. And the response from CeeDee Lamb, he sees the quote from a reporter. Actually, it's more than one, but he sees it on social media and quotes Jerry Jones with an LOL. Justin Jefferson, he got a big deal in June. 4 years, $140 million. $110 million guaranteed. So among NFL players that are not quarterbacks, he's the highest paid, $35 million per year. CeeDee Lamb is looking for something along those lines. I dare say would expect that that's how the Cowboys see him, the same way that the Vikings see Jefferson. CeeDee played in all 17 games last year. Well, let's see. He played in 17 games last year. 135 catches. I mentioned the more than 1,700 receiving yards. Both of those brand new franchise marks for the Cowboys. He was tops in the league with 135 catches. And remember, Dak Prescott was an MVP candidate. CeeDee Lamb's a big piece of that. He's valuable. And as much as this may be convoluted, maybe a bit of a traffic jam, we've heard Stephen Jones say it's complicated to think about paying all three of the Cowboys' big names, Dak, CeeDee, and Micah Parsons, all of those guys in their own rights, are expecting to be paid. How do you get that done? Well, I mean, you got to start somewhere. No sense of urgency. Your offense is not the same without CeeDee Lamb. I know Cowboys fans, it's got to be mixed emotions here. A lot of people want to point the fingers at Jerry Jones. But will CeeDee Lamb actually leave $18 million on the table? Could the Cowboys be one of those teams that don't make the playoffs? I don't see that. I can't see that happening because the defense is too good, even without Dan Quinn as coordinator. The defense is so good, and it's not like Dak is going to regress. He can still throw the football. As long as he's healthy, he can still chuck. Now, can they protect him? Does he have targets? All those things remain to be seen. And without CeeDee Lamb, yes, fewer options, fewer great options. And so we're asking you, which teams make the playoffs this year that didn't last year? Could the Cowboys be a candidate for one that gets knocked off? At A-Law Radio, also on our Facebook page, good to have you with us. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
Everybody deserves a win after this streak.
This could do it. Out to left field, coming in. Benintendi. And the streak is over. After 21 L's in a row, the White Sox come to the West Coast and get their first win in a long time. Say it with me, Southside, stand up.
Here's Amy Lawrence.
I love that they were excited. Yes, first win in a long time for the Chicago White Sox. However, the euphoria, short-lived. On the White Sox radio network, they just recently snapped that 21-game skid. They did not set a brand new record for most consecutive losses by an American League team. Instead, they tied the Orioles of the late 80s, I think it was. And so they remain in the history books, but at least they are not alone. Misery loves company. But as I say, they win on the road in Oakland and then lose the next night and finally decide to pull the trigger, proverbially, on making changes. I have no idea why it took so long, but the White Sox fired Pedro Grifol and named Grady Sizemore the interim. And right now they're going through a bunch of different evaluation processes, I guess. I just don't know why it would be a sense of urgency now where it wasn't before. It's been a terrible season for the White Sox. 21 losses in a row, notwithstanding, they barely have 21 victories on the season. And so why now? I guess that is the question. And while it may not be a satisfactory answer, the general manager of the White Sox, Chris Getz, he's at least explaining why Thursday, August 8th.
You know, it takes a really thorough process to make decisions like these. You know, a major league roster is a reflection of, upwards to 5 years of work. So when you've got a manager that's just in year two, you want to make sure that, you know, you're making the right decision. And as time went on and you know, we were learning more about what the needs are of this organization and where the direction we want to head, it became clearer and clearer that it was time for a change.
It became clearer and clearer. What else is he going to say, I suppose? But it became clearer and clearer. Yeah, I would suppose after 21 consecutive losses, it definitely came into focus, as in crystal clear. Are we clear? Crystal. And I'm not exulting or happy that anyone's lost a job. I just really don't understand the timing. maybe didn't want to make a change in the middle of the 21-game losing skid. Of course, you never start out with a couple of losses and think, okay, this could turn into 21 in a row. White Sox have the worst record in the majors. They're not going to get any better this season. But according to Chris Getz, obviously there was something that was broken. And they've been, well, this season, I'm not sure how many expectations there were. Last season, there were actually expectations. And forget underachieving, they didn't even sniff the expectations that were set for them. And so this is maybe the beginning of cleaning house. They fire a handful of other coaches along with Grifol and will have to start fresh. There's still a chance they could end up with the worst record in MLB history. I don't know what Grady Sizemore can say that might turn things around. But according to Getz, they're going to look outside the organization for a new manager. And they're going to think outside the box. I guess when it's this bad, you can't close any door and say, nope, we're not going that direction. Because you got to find something, anything that can turn the ship around or at least give that clubhouse, that fan base, some kind of hope that it's not always going to be this way. But that's a tall order right now. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Of course, think about where the Houston Astros were. Three consecutive years with 100-plus losses. They end up getting some really high draft picks, a couple of number ones. And not that long after, they're able to capture a World Series with trash cans. Have to have the trash cans. 855-212-4227. I did it. I put it up on our Twix. My Twix, and I'll use the show Twix to share it as well. But it's the question for the night, and of course it'll carry on through the weekend, the first weekend of preseason. Roughly half the NFL playoff field turns over every year. Who are the top candidates to make the postseason after missing out in 2023? Ooh, and you're going to love the gift that I put on Twix. It's priceless. You want a hype man. He's your hype man. So I'll let you go and check that out again at A-Law Radio. On our Facebook page, you won't believe what Josh Allen is doing. I picked two different gifts, so it's not the same gift. I picked two different ones. And yes, again, roughly half the NFL playoff field turns over. Seven new teams, roughly. So who are the seven new teams, or even give us a few. But yeah, check out the gifts on both Twix and on Facebook. They're different, they're unique, and yet they are perfect. I'm getting good at this gift thing. I'm feeling myself with this gift thing. And then 855-212-4227. We'll get to some more baseball coming up next hour, plus the queen, Sydney McLaughlin Leveroni. Man, a world record again? Is anything out of her reach? I think the smart answer is no. Ken is listening in Ontario. Ken, welcome to After Hours.
Oh, hi, Amy. I haven't spoken to you since Rex Ryan was the coach of the Buffalo Bills.
Wow.
That was a long time ago.
I was going to say, I don't even remember that.
That's right. And I told you at the time that the only thing that this team's got going for them is Kim and Terry Pegula. And since then, a lot has happened. At least finally now, Buffalo's got a quarterback, which we waited for 20 years to get. But anyways, he's arrived. The only thing, problem I think he's got an average team that he's got to try and bring over the hump, and I don't think this year is the year for him. I think that they're gearing up everything for next year and the year after. That's my personal belief.
Why?
I believe because the one thing that Bean, I think, sort of messed up on was the defense. And it's going to take at least a year or two for them to catch up. They had an old defense that was long in the tooth, and I think signing Von Miller, as great as he is, I think was a crucial mistake on his part. But he's making up for it now. He's made the defense younger. Give him a chance. But the offense, I just don't think Allen has enough tools at receiver.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that's going to be a major issue. Now, the thing is, though, and I would say this, Ken, for somewhat of an encouragement, when you have great quarterbacks, they generally can raise the level of the play of the receivers, even if they aren't Stephon Diggs, even if they aren't, the top receivers out there. And I'm not even sure who the wide receiver one is for this group. But if Josh Allen is as good this year as he's been since he got into the NFL, he obviously has a turnover issue now and then, but a lot of that is just about being aggressive. If he can coach these guys up and they can respond to him and work with him and put in that time, find that rhythm, he can make them better just the same way that Peyton Manning did, Tom Brady did, Patrick Mahomes does. He will make them all better if they follow his lead.
Yes. But the one thing we could be underestimating as Curtis Samuel, because I believe that he's never had a quarterback like this to work with. This guy could be a lot better than what the numbers are showing, because really, this is his first crack at a great quarterback.
That's a good point.
And I like the kid that they drafted. He's got size. He's gangly. He could be good. Only time will tell, Amy.
Right.
I guess that's all I can say.
Yeah. Well, I would say that because of their coaching, I like their leadership. And it's not just Josh. They do have some veterans. Of course, they cleaned house when it comes to veterans. The division is still theirs. They still have to be knocked off that throne in the division. Thank you so much, Ken, for your phone call. Good to talk to you in Ontario. Little preseason football. I wouldn't count the Bills out just yet. But here's what I always say about the offense. If Josh Allen is your top running back, something's wrong. I know he's good. I know he's aggressive. I know that he's a tank. But still, I worry about him doing too much of that. Curtis Samuel, maybe Ken's on to something. He was with the Panthers and the Commanders before the Bills. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
Deserves a win after this streak.
This could do it. Out to left field, coming in. Benintendi, and the streak is over. After 21 L's in a row, the White Sox come to the West Coast and get their first win in a long time. Say it with me. Southside, stand up.
Here's Amy Lawrence.
I love that they were excited. Yes, first win in a long time for the Chicago White Sox. However, the euphoria short-lived. On the White Sox radio network, they just recently snapped that 21-game skid. They did not set a brand new record for most consecutive losses by an American League team. Instead, they tied the Orioles of the late 80s, I think it was. And so they remain in the history books, but at least they are not alone. Misery loves company. But as I say, they win on the road in Oakland and then lose the next night and finally decide to pull the trigger, proverbially, on making changes. I have no idea why it took so long, but the White Sox fired Pedro Grifol and named Grady Sizemore the interim. And right now they're going through a bunch of different evaluation processes, I guess. I just don't know why it would be a sense of urgency now where it wasn't before. It's been a terrible season for the White Sox. 21 losses in a row notwithstanding. They barely have 21 victories on the season. And so why now? I guess that is the question. And while it may not be a satisfactory answer, the general manager of the White Sox, Chris Getz, he's at least explaining why Thursday, August 8th.
You know, it takes a really thorough process to make decisions like these. You know, a major league roster is a reflection of, you know, upwards to 5 years of work. So when you've got a manager that's just in year two, you want to make sure that, you know, you're making the right decision. And as time went on and you know, we were learning more about what the needs are of this organization and where the direction we want to head, it became clearer and clearer that it was time for a change.
It became clearer and clearer. What else is he going to say, I suppose? But it became clearer and clearer. Yeah, I would suppose after 21 consecutive losses, it definitely came into focus, as in crystal clear. Are we clear? Crystal. And I'm not exulting or happy that anyone's lost a job. I just really don't understand the timing. Maybe didn't want to make a change in the middle of the 21-game losing skid. Of course, you never start out with a couple of losses and think, okay, this could turn into 21 in a row. White Sox have the worst record in the majors. They're not going to get any better this season. But according to Chris Getz, obviously there was something that was broken. And they've been, well, this season, I'm not sure how many expectations there were. Last season, there were actually expectations. And forget underachieving, they didn't even sniff the expectations that were set for them. And so this is maybe the beginning of cleaning house. They fire a handful of other coaches along with Grifol, and we'll have to start fresh. There's still a chance they could end up with the worst record in MLB history. I don't know what Grady Sizemore can say that might turn things around. But according to Getz, they're going to look outside the organization for a new manager. And they're going to think outside the box. I guess when it's this bad, you can't close any door and say, nope, we're not going that direction. Because you got to find something, anything, that can turn the ship around. Or at least give that clubhouse, that fan base, some kind of hope that it's not always going to be this way. But that's a tall order right now. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Of course, think about where the Houston Astros were. Three consecutive years with 100-plus losses. They end up getting some really high draft picks, a couple of number ones, and not that long after, they're able to capture a World Series with trash cans. Have to have the trash cans. 855-212-4227. I did it. I put it up on our Twix. My Twix, and I'll use the show Twix to share it as well. But it's the question for the night, and of course it'll carry on through the weekend, the first weekend of preseason. Roughly half the NFL playoff field turns over every year. Who are the top candidates to make the postseason after missing out in 2023? Ooh, and you're going to love the gift that I put on Twix. It's, well, it's priceless. You want a hype man. He's your hype man. So I'll let you go and check that out again at A-Law Radio. On our Facebook page, you won't believe what Josh Allen is doing. I picked two different gifts, so it's not the same gift. I picked two different ones. And yes, again, roughly half the NFL playoff field turns over. Seven new teams, roughly. So who are the seven new teams? Or even give us a few. But yeah, check out the gifts on both Twix and on Facebook. They're different, they're unique, and yet they are perfect. I'm getting good at this gift thing. I'm feeling myself with this gift thing. And then 855-212-4227. We'll get to some more baseball coming up next hour, plus the Queen, Sydney McLaughlin-Levroni, man, a world record again is anything out of her reach? I think the smart answer is no. Ken is listening in Ontario. Ken, welcome to After Hours.
Oh, hi, Amy. I haven't spoken to you since Rex Ryan was the coach of the Buffalo Bills.
Wow.
That was a long time ago.
I was going to say, I don't even remember that.
That's right. And I told you at the time that the only thing that this team's got going for them is Kim and Terry Pegula. And since then, a lot has happened. At least finally now, Buffalo's got a quarterback, which we waited for 20 years to get. But anyways, he's arrived. The only thing, problem I think he's got an average team that he's got to try and bring over the hump, and I don't think this year is the year for him. I think that they're gearing up everything for next year and the year after. That's my personal belief.
Why?
I believe because the one thing that Bean, I think, sort of messed up on was the defense. And it's going to take at least a year or two for them to catch up. They had an old defense that was long in the tooth, and I think signing Von Miller, as great as he is, I think was a crucial mistake on his part. But he's making up for it now. He's made the defense younger. Give him a chance. But the offense, I just don't think Allen has enough tools at receiver.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that's going to be a major issue. Now, the thing is, though, and I would say this, Ken, for somewhat of an encouragement, when you have great quarterbacks, they generally can raise the level of the play of the receivers, even if they aren't Stephon Diggs, even if they aren't, you know, the top receivers out there. And I'm not even sure who the wide receiver one is for this group. But if Josh Allen is as good this year as he's been since he got into the NFL, he obviously has a turnover issue now and then, but a lot of that is just about being aggressive. If he can coach these guys up and they can respond to him and work with him and put in that time, find that rhythm, he can make them better just the same way that Peyton Manning did, Tom Brady did, Patrick Mahomes does. He will make them all better if they follow his lead.
Yes. But the one thing that we could be underestimating is Curtis Samuel, because I believe that he's never had a quarterback like this to work with. This guy could be a lot better than what the numbers are showing, because really, this is his first crack at a great quarterback.
That's and a good point.
And I like the kid that they drafted. He's got size. He's gangly. He could be good, but only time will tell, Amy.
Right.
I guess that's all I can say.
Yeah. Well, I would say that because of their coaching, I like their leadership, and it's not just Josh. They do have some veterans. Of course, they cleaned house when it comes to veterans. And you know, the division is still theirs. They still have to be knocked off that throne in the division. Thank you so much, Ken, for your phone call. Good to talk to you in Ontario. Little preseason football. I wouldn't count the Bills out just yet, but here's what I always say about the offense. If Josh Allen is your top running back, something's wrong. I know he's good. I know he's aggressive. I know that he's a tank. But still, I worry about him doing too much of that. Curtis Samuel, maybe Ken's on to something. He was with the Panthers and the Commanders before the Bills. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.